You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The one thing, it was so evident last year, though, guys, with the Peterson was such a moron, the front office, it just seemed like a disaster. And obviously, when they threw in the what was that guy's name? Sudfeld, what the hell his name was?
I've got great Knight Sudfeld experience, former Washington fan favorite.
Threw the division.
Is
Sud's
going
to
make the roster? I don't know. Leave me alone.
Yeah, he threw the division because he wanted to see what he had. I mean, what an absolute joke. Now, obviously, Doug Peterson died a Game of Thrones death for them to get Devonta Smith, which is unbelievable. I mean, they got Devonta Smith because they lost that game.
Who you betting on? Always on black, fat stats in the pocket, whole squad, fast tags. Send the bookie, tell him bring it from the bag. No, we coming for the bag. West Coast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the few in attendance and the thousands listening around the world, let's get ready to gamble. My name is Tony Cavallo. As always, I'm joined by Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio.
Hello.
And Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookston.
What's going on?
We are the West Coast Gamblers, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network and the only gambling show that makes you money. Today is the beginning of our NFC week of divisional previews. We're playing Marry, Date, Ghost today. Mrs. Crookston finally got
she
us.
She called
we're saying,
and was like, no, no
over
more swearing.
Over and over again she called. Over and over again
so
she called.
My mom is so proud. She's so proud, Craig. Thank you. Thank you for being a trailblazer of this new game.
Marry, Date, Ghost today. Still the same way we break down the divisions, and will we be giving out a season win total at the end of the show? This is NFC week. NFC East starts us off. We got the North, the South, and the West coming on for the rest of the week. And then September 6th, mark the date in your calendars, our biggest show yet. It's going to be time for the season-long futures. Bets out the wazoo. This is the same show that went 13-5 with their propaganda during the Super Bowl. We will be putting our nose to the grindstone and giving you bets that will win for the NFL future that's coming September 6th. But now, let's get to the NFC East. As you guys know, if you listen to our AFC shows, we cannot break down these divisions without a little bit of help, and we have some help today. Our guest today can be found on Twitter, at Craig Hoffman. He has been on this show before as a beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan, in Washington, D.C. He was covering the sports team soon to be known as the Washington Red Wolves. And today he is helping us with the NFC East. As we can see on video right now, he has not gained the quarantine 15 like the rest of us, but we won't hold it against him because he is a fellow Syracuse alum. So please welcome to the show a returning Craig Hoffman. Welcome back, my friend.
Man, gas me up. Let's go.
Speaking of gassing you up, I do want to say we can find you now on Washington Training Camp Live, your podcast for the Audacity app. You've been doing the training camp with this Washington football team, the Odyssey app. I messed it up at the top. I knew I was going to. But Mr. Craig, you've been at training camp. We had Fernando at the Los Angeles Chargers training camp last week talk about that experience. What can you say about being there in the practice, right on the field, seeing it happen in front of you?
Nothing. I don't have to do it anymore. They let me do the podcast titled Washington Training Camp Live without going to training camp. It's fantastic. but it has been really cool to talk to the people who have been there. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I did the beat thing for 5 years, but I just get to talk to the people who do go. So whether it's our insiders, Chris Russell and Grant Paulson, who go out there and host shows on R2 radio stations here in D.C., working with my guy Logan Paulson, longtime Washington football and a couple other teams in the league, tight end, who spent some time out there. We had Julie Donaldson, who's part of the team broadcast, which could either be a common or proper noun, the team, if you will. She's part
Nobody
of the team,
knows anymore.
The broadcast, and having her on the show. So we've had plenty of voices, and I think some of the interesting stuff from training camp in person, one, everyone's excited to be back after a year of not being able to do any witnessing of anything in person because of COVID. But seeing the differences now between Ron Rivera and the previous staffs, obviously Jay Gruden when I was covering the team in the past couple of years, kind of the crispness and the sharpness and the pace at which they practice versus how it used to be a little more lax under Jay, which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing, could matter, could not really matter, but just the differences has been one of the things that I think a lot of people have commented on. And then the other thing that I'm sure we'll get into is for this Washington team specifically, like, watching these dudes run in person, watching Terry McLaurin run, watching De'Ami Brown, their third-round pick, run. These are, and obviously when he's been out there, which hasn't been a ton, Curtis Samuel, bunch of 4-3 guys out there running around, and everyone's been like, holy cow, this is going to be a really fun team if they stay healthy with the speed that they have. So, well, I haven't had a chance to see that in person yet. Those have been some of the big takeaways as I sit in my cozy studio, which currently is my home, which is another fun COVID turn.
Right there with you, buddy. Right there with you. I do have to say, though, we mentioned this at the top, and it is the question we ask every Washington football team fan when we meet the one of them that is out there in the world. But what do you want the team name to be? Because they're apparently bandying around the final 8 ideas right now, trying to narrow it down to 3. Is there something you want to stick your hat in that you support? Or is there something even worse that you don't want it?
Yeah, I mean, some of them are just terrible. Like, the Brigade just doesn't... Like, some of them sound like... Remember in the early, like, Madden days, you create a franchise and it'd be like, Tiburon, and then...
Yes.
Yeah, anything that sounds like that...
Yeah.
Anything that sounds like that's got to go. So, like, the Washington Brigade sounds like the Tiburon Sharks or whatever it is.
Yep.
So, we can't be doing that. I don't have one that sounds great. I do think it's the kind of thing, too, that when you see the logo and you see the entire presentation, and Jason Wright, their team president, has talked a lot about this, where it's not just about the name. It's about the entire brand. And, you know, for him, he's trying to play up to the fan base and talk about stewarding memories. But, like, I don't think that the colors, like, scream modern, fun team. But, like, for a lot of people in the fan base, which has diminished over the years for sure, but is still a very strong nationwide fan base. When I was traveling with the team, you know, I was always surprised at how many road fans were on the road, especially considering going to FedEx Field. The home games weren't exactly packed. That's a lot to do with the stadium. But, you know, that it's an interesting thing because they don't match the rest of the teams in town. You know, there's the Capitals and the Nats and all these other teams, the Wizards and the Mystics and the Spirit, the women's soccer team here. They all kind of have that red, white, and blue DC thing. And I think a lot of the names are on that front. And then the colors are still going to be burgundy and gold. So I don't know what they're going to do. Red Hog seems to be really popular. I mean, do you want to be the Red Hogs? I don't know. It does pay homage to the old O-line. It does let you keep the color scheme. That one seems to make the most sense. But, like, I'm afraid that one's going to have a really stupid logo, so I don't have a particular brand that I super love at this point.
I think I kind of liked the Defenders, and I understand that is a Madden simulation name, but for whatever reason, I think that's a football team.
That's like the Cleveland Guardians all over again.
I mean, the other thing
we have to do better. We have to do better.
The other thing, too, with Defenders is the XFL that lasted 3 months, they were the DC Defenders. So you're already – that team's already come and gone. I don't know if you can go back to that. Plus, there could be some –
you can't reanimate that team. That might not be a good omen.
And so here's the other thing, too, with some of the names, and not to get too lost on this tangent, but I'll make this like the 10-second
version.
I think
people are interested to know what the hell the team's name is going to be.
I mean, but like, how interested are they in legalese? There was a guy – who lives in Alexandria, one of the suburbs of DC, who, like, saw all these names out there and was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to trademark them all. So when they pick one, they're going to have to pay me a bunch of money. And so, like, half the names that they want, this dude has a trademark for. He's just going to go random guy in Alexandria.
Playing checkers.
Right.
Put a statue up of that guy.
So, like, the Red Wolves seems to be
we need to get him on the podcast, Craig. Can we get him on the podcast?
We'll have to – maybe now I'm going to have to, like, play agent here. And apparently this guy's got some cash, so we're going to have to do a brokerage deal. But, like, Red Wolves is the one that seems to be the most popular, and I think that one's on his list. So, like, I think if this was just Red Wolves and they had been smarter about trademarking stuff ahead of time, this could have been done by now. But they don't want to be stuck in a 10-year court battle with this dude who have to pay him millions of dollars to get a trademark for something that they were like, hey, maybe we'll name our team this. And then some guy was smart enough to go like, hey, dum-dums, this isn't trademarked yet. I think I'm going to snag that.
When has a Snyder team ever been smart, though? That is the real question at hand. But let's get into this division. It is time to marry one of these teams. Each of the hosts is going to give out a marry. This is the division winner. I'm going to go to our guest here first. I understand you cover the Washington football team. They are the reigning division winner, but this is the NFC East. There is a new crown every single season when it comes to this division. No one had a winning record in this division last year. I do think that changes this year. But who are you going with, Craig, as the champion? Who are you marrying here?
I'm probably going to look like an absolute idiot for saying this at the end of the season, but I actually think it's the Washington football team. Like, they have the thing that I trust the most. This defense is going to be gross. as long as they're healthy. And that's the thing that's hardest to predict, right? And for as much as people want to talk about Montez Sweat and Chase Young, who could be the best defensive end pairing in the entire league if they are both healthy and continue to progress the way we think they are, there is not any depth behind them. You're looking at a bunch of seventh-round picks behind them. Interior line, they've got a lot more depth. John Allen, who they just signed to a contract extension, is great. I actually think Daron Payne's a better player. Everyone loves Allen because he's a leader and he's out front, and he was here a year earlier, and Payne's kind of like the little brother. I actually think Daron Payne's a better football player than Jonathan Allen. Whatever that's worth, keep that in the back of your mind when they let Payne walk and they've already signed Allen. Matt Ioannidis is back for them, who is really, really good. He was a fifth-round pick, like, 4 years ago, I think, at this point. But he's an excellent, like, borderline Pro Bowl caliber player in terms of the production that he's had. And they also have Tim Settle inside. So they have a really good D-line rotation. The linebacker is a bit of a question mark just in terms of, does their first-round pick, Jamin Davis, ultimately pan out the way they want him to in year one? How much can they put on his plate? But I like the options they have. Corner, they've got some good players. They signed William Jackson III in the offseason to help supplement that position. Kendall Fuller's still around. And then
one
safety,
of the fastest
Landon
guys
Collins
in the NFL. You can't beat the speed on the outside, William Jackson.
Absolutely. And they're going to play a lot of different coverages this year than they did last year. Last year, they were almost exclusively a zone team because they didn't have great cover guys and a bunch of their dudes were hurt. This year, they feel like they've got some more depth and are going to probably mix and match coverages
a little bit more,
which should make them harder to game plan against. And then at safety, like, Cam Curl was a revelation last year as a rookie. He's back. Landon Collins looks great in the preseason. He looks like he's going to be back. Bobby McCain's a vet they brought in to rotate in that safety position as well. So, like, when I look at what's, like, the surest unit in the division, it's Washington's defense. And by the way, offensively, they should be really good. As long as Ryan Fitzpatrick is not disastrous, if he can, this might be the easiest task that Fitzpatrick has had in his entire career. Like, he's put up numbers and won some games in some spots, but he's done a lot of, like, I have to improvise, I have to maybe have one guy. He's got Terry McLaurin, who's as good as, I don't want to say as good as anybody. He's not A+, but, like, he's an A receiver, a legit bonafide.
He's a receiver
one.
I think any coach would be happy to have on 100%. Their team as a one, right?
I don't want to interrupt you, but we don't know if he's an A+ because who he's had throwing him the ball. He very well could be an A+, and we will see the finished product of Terry McLaurin this year.
So I'll push back. Like, I love Terry. He's my one of my favorite humans I ever covered. And so this is as close to a negative thing as I'll ever say about Terry McLaurin. I just don't think he's as explosive, like, as a jumper, and it's just, like, as twitchy as DeAndre Hopkins, right? If DeAndre Hopkins is it, I don't think Terry is quite that, but he's as good as you can possibly be right below that.
Like, tier 1A, you know?
Exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly. But, like, to the point that he's a bona fide number one option. He's just not going to ever, I think, be the best receiver in the league. But if there's, like, four guys in that mix, Terry might be five for the next 7 years.
Do you get the sense, obviously, he was reunited with his college teammate, Curtis Samuel, from a university we don't speak of on this podcast. But do you get the sense, that an acquisition like that is a little boost of morale for a guy that's obviously coming off a big year? Does that mean anything to you as someone who covers the team? As I'm talking about the tandem as a receiver, those guys really, can Scary Terry elevate Samuel's game? Because obviously he's been good when healthy, but he's had a hard time staying on the field. What's your stance on that?
Yeah, and by the way, it's the university that we don't speak of on this podcast. So you gotta get it right.
I don't give him the.
I figured as much by the other name. But I think that it's twofold. Like, one, it's a nice story, right? They've been boys forever, and it is what it is. On, like, the personal front.
Who wouldn't
front.
Want to play on their college teammate, right?
Like, yeah, you know, like, what I mean? I mean, that's exciting, but, like, we've been through that with Dwayne Haskins and see how that worked out. So I think Terry's, like, mature and professional enough to know that just because his old buddy's around doesn't mean that, like, everything's going to be all hunky-dory. I think Terry McLaurin's excited for Curtis Samuel because it's another dude who can dictate coverage.
Yeah.
And Terry has been it the last couple of years. And with all due respect to Cam Sims and some of the other guys that have been around, even Logan Thomas, who's, like, a very good tight end and is becoming a top 10 caliber NFL tight end, he's not a guy that you necessarily game plan for. You got to know where Curtis Samuel is at all times, and you have to track him as he does, you know, all the motion stuff that he does. Otherwise, you're screwed. Like, you lose that guy, and it's a touchdown. But the same is true for Terry. And so having another guy that, and I remember having these conversations with both Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell when they were here as OCs, and they kind of looked at offense this way. When the defensive coordinator sets up his meeting, he's going to go up and write numbers on the board. And it used to be when I was covering the team and those guys were here as the OC, there was one number that went up on the board, opposed to Sean Jackson and Pierre Garçon leaving. And it was 86. And it was only up there about half the season because Jordan Reed was hurt a ton.
Yep.
Right? But he was the only thing that they had. Now, if you're a defensive coordinator and you're scouting Washington, you better write 17 up there for McLaren. You better write Curtis Samuel up there. You better say, hey, when De'Ami Brown, this rookie, is on the field, you better be alert because he's going to run by you, and that's a touchdown. You better be kind of aware of what Logan Thomas is doing. You better be aware of what Antonio Gibson is doing. If it's third down, you better know where J.D. McKissick is as a third down back. So, like, they'll design offense for it. You want to give up an easy first down? Lose track of J.D. McKissick. I'm not telling you he's, like, dynamic, but in certain situations, like, you have
options.
To be aware of him.
He gives them options, and he's an extra variable that you have to plan for, and that in and of itself makes it more challenging to plan for the team.
100%. And if he's getting, like, your fourth or fifth best coverage option, that's an advantage for Washington.
Absolutely.
And so, when, you know, getting back to where I started this long meandering point about 2.5 questions ago, like, this is the easiest task that Fitzpatrick has ever had because he's got a bunch of weapons. And it simply is my one better than your one? Is my two better than your two? And the answer across the board for Washington is going to be yes in a lot of games. There just aren't going to be a ton of cover, you know, top flight corners that are like, yeah, I got it easy today. I got Terry McLaurin. Yep. Number two guys who are, I got it easy. I got Curtis Samuel. Even slot guys, like, hey, I got it easy. I got Adam Humphries. Like, Adam Humphries had a great year a couple years ago.
Solid slot wide receiver. No, I'm with you, Craig, for all of those reasons. I'm also marrying the Washington football team. And just to put the bow on everything that you put up there, they have a really veteran offensive line there with Chase Roullier, with Brandon Sheriff. Wes Schweitzer has played around. Charles Leno is a guy I think he used to be with the Bears, but he's got a number of years. Like, this is a veteran.
He was a turnstile with the Bears, I just have to say. Keep going, Dangle.
Again, but maybe, okay, so maybe he was, but maybe he has a rebirth in here in Washington. All I'm saying is they have pieces, just to all of your point, they have pieces. They have probably more to work with than Ryan Fitzpatrick has ever had to work with in his career. And you brought up the defense. I think they are absolutely still the team to beat, and I want to root for them because Ron Rivera is like the knight in shining armor for vaccination in the NFL. And I love
that he's being
a hard ass about it. So I want to root for the first time in a really long time, maybe since I can ever remember, I want to root for the Washington football team.
I have to say, guys, I'm right there with you. I'm not going to wax poetic about it because Craig already did that for us, and he mentioned all the reasons why I have Washington picked to repeat as the NFC East champions. I love this team this year because of that defense and how young and how aggressive they are. Four first-round picks the last 4 years on that defensive line, and then this past draft, they spent the first-round pick on Jamin Davis, who Ron Rivera in interviews has talked about giving him the Luke Kuechly role. He might not be ready to step into Luke Kuechly-type shoes yet, according to Ron Rivera, but he's getting the opportunity to call the plays on defense, call out the coverages, put guys where they're supposed to be. The pressure and responsibility is on him, and who better to coach a middle linebacker than Ron Rivera? I love this defense. I think they're going to win games close. I think they're going to win games tight. Ryan Fitzpatrick, we saw in Miami, can do just enough if the defense can keep him in it to win the game in the end. I trust Fitzpatrick with this offense, and I'll be taking unders all year long in their games because the defense, I don't know how you score in them. In the playoffs last year, this was the only team that gave Tampa Bay's offense trouble, and that was with Taylor Heinicke at the helm. I just think this is a better team. I love Washington this year. Schaefer the Sharp, we go to you for our last marry.
Well, guys, I think the one thing that Fitzmagic has proven over the course of his career is when he has that starting job, he seems to regress a little bit in his performance as opposed to when he's coming off the bench, kind of the bullpen. Now, you know, what I saw from Taylor Heinicke last year in the playoffs, I was impressed with it. I don't care what anyone says. I was extremely impressed in that postseason performance. But as Craig has said, he's talked about their defense at length. I don't need to repeat anything he said because he was way more articulate than it could ever be talking about that defensive side of the unit. The best unit in this division, I 100% agree. When you look at the Washington football team's weapons, what would you been over? Scary Terry, Samuel, Logan Thomas, which our friend Chris Dell actually pointed out as a fantasy sleeper, and obviously Gibson and McKissick with an offensive line. You look at this division, how can you not? How can you not? I'm making a clean sweep. You're marrying the Washington football team. I 100% agree with this, that they will be back in the playoffs as division champs. My hint of pessimism is we've seen this story before with Fitzmagic. Once he gets that starter's role, you know you're going to bang your head on the table. You have a bet on him at some point. He's going to throw into quadruple coverage, get a pass picked off. It's going to drive you crazy. He's going to make some boneheaded plays throughout the year. The question, this is my X factor with the football team. I think it's the second biggest coaching advantage in all the divisions, with the exception of one, which we'll key on later. But I give a massive, massive coaching edge to the football team with Rivera, as opposed to you have a second-year guy in Joe Judge, you have a first-year guy in Nick Sirianni, and also finally
you have a human Mike Twinkie McCarthy's. In Mike McCarthy.
Mike McCarthy's not doing himself any favors in Hard Knocks this season, so I love the coaching.
Go out there and
Rivera.
Do football stuff, guys. Yeah. Good job. Good job playing football.
Marrying the Washington football team, a clean sweep of the West Coast Gamblers.
I love that. I love that. Good for Washington, man. I'd love to see it, but let's move on to who we're dating. And Drew's already brought them up right here. Listen, I don't want to do this, but this is kind of that thing. You see someone, you've known someone for a long time, then you don't see them for a while, and they get a little bit of a makeover. Maybe they start a new fitness training regimen. They're eating better. They're a little bit healthier, and suddenly they're walking down the street, and you go, who the F is that guy? And we're talking about Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys, because this team has the opportunity and has the players to make waves, especially on offense. If Zeke is a little bit thinner and he stops fumbling the ball, he can get back to where Zeke was. If Dak Prescott's shoulder's okay and his ankle's fine, he can get back to where Dak was. CeeDee Lamb looks like he's a number one wide receiver already. Amari Cooper has proven he's a number one wide receiver already. And then Michael Gallup, everyone's been waiting for him to break out. Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz can do whatever you need as a tight end. And then Mike McCarthy's won a Super Bowl, question mark, for my Green Bay Packers. But I really cannot stop looking to date this Dallas Cowboy team. In fact, Vegas has them as their win total as the highest one in the division. I'm not sure I'm taking that number. But talk me out of Dallas, guys. Am I the only one dating this team, Dangles?
No, I can't talk you out of Dallas. I'm dating them too. I think there's a lot to be excited about. I mean, on defense, you know, that's, I think, been a lot of the question mark for them. Everybody knows they have a very good offensive line. You talked about the talent at wide receiver. Dak being healthy is huge. You know, and look, their defense isn't stellar, but I think that Dan Quinn, as much as you hate him, Tony, is an upgrade from Mike Nolan and what we saw over the last couple of years. I think that's a step in the right direction. I think you're seeing that a little bit in the preseason game so far as well. So no, I'm with you. I like Dallas as my date this year for this. I think they're a team to be high on, and I don't think you'd be nuts to bet an over on them necessarily if you felt that. I will not be doing that, but I don't think you'd be nuts to do it.
I think they have four guaranteed wins in the Giants and Philly, I'll tell you that. But the other two, let's go to our guest Craig. Am I an idiot for taking Dallas as my date to the prom here?
No, not at all. They're the flirtiest team, right? Like, they're the one that it feels wrong because yeah, it feels, yes, like it, they're does. Chaos, right? It feels like with Dak that this is just a bad situation. The contract stuff that went on longer than it should have. You know, the same, kind of had the same feeling last year with Zeke. He's got the shoulder that he's in, he's out, he's out. When the hell is he coming back in? Like, this feels bad if I'm a Cowboys fan right now. I'm not feeling good about this season. But then I pull up the depth chart and I go, okay, I feel good now. Like, offensively, they should be gross. Like, yeah. If Zeke is Zeke, and with the way these receivers are, and if Dak is back to where he is capable of, this offense should put up 25 a game and huge. Have a couple of, you know, 3-4 games where they drop 40. Because they just have so much big play potential. Yeah, like, CeeDee Lamb's really good. Amari Cooper, you know, we talk about that level that can Terry McLaurin get there. Like, Amari Cooper is that level. When he's right, he's as good of a route runner as there is in the league. Yeah. His quickness, his precision in his routes, he's incredible. I just never got why, like, Oakland gave up on him and why it never really worked there, I guess because...
It's Oakland. You know, it was Oakland. Las Vegas.
it didn't Oakland, work in man. Oakland so bad, they moved out of Oakland. You know, defensively, you know, Parsons could be a really good player for them as a rookie. He's kind of this impact kind of guy that fell because he's got some stuff that's not great. But at the end of the day on Sundays, like, as much as I
he's
don't
hungry,
want to dismiss
though,
that.
You know? He's hungry. Yeah, he's certainly
as much
hungry.
As much as I don't want to dismiss that, like, it doesn't matter when they go between the lines on Sundays. Like, nope. He gets to make plays, and they don't take off points because you did some really shady shit in college.
And he's surrounded by great talent at the linebacker position, so it's not going to be all on him.
100%. And so if their defense can just hold, their offense should be good. And so they're the team that scares me the most if I'm anyone else in this division, because I even think more than Washington, like, their ceiling is extremely high.
Yes.
I just don't know how likely they are to reach it, and they do feel like an organization that if it goes wrong, the explosion could be equally spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talked earlier when we covered the AFC last week, we talked about teams that are up against it like Denver and Vic Fangio. They know that this is their make or break year. in my opinion, this is a make or break year for Mike McCarthy in the hot seat in Dallas, because if they perform under expectations again, he's not going to be able to talk about the injuries as an excuse. A lot riding on Mojo Mike. Shea for the Sharp, are you taking Dallas to the prom as well here?
Guys, I'm not. I'm not taking Dallas.
All right.
I'm going to go.
Who else are you going with
here? Yeah. I'm going a little off script here. Now, notice that I'm not talking season totals, but I am going to buy a little training camp hype on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
And here's why.
Okay.
I'm not a Jalen Hurts believer. However, he has looked impressive in training camp on 7-on-7s. I know that's not 11-on-11, but you know, this surrounding guy who embarrassed himself in his first press conference seems to have those players playing for him. Now, what did Philly have last year? Or sorry, what did they not have last year? Anyone that could catch the goddamn football. They could have no receivers. Well, now they have Jalen Reagor, Quez Watkins, and Devonta Smith, who was my favorite player of all last draft, all under 25, all having really good training camps. So maybe, just maybe, Hurts has someone to throw the ball to. He can use his legs. If Miles Sanders is healthy, which he's, again, he's never healthy, but if he's healthy, I think this Eagles team is a fun team to date. You know, go out in a happy hour, maybe a Saturday morning hike, you know, just something like that. Now, again, I'm not tying my lot to them. I'm not spending a ton of money on them. I'm not wooing them, going on weekend excursions.
They're just risking.
We're not going to Nobu or anything like that.
I think it's a great happy hour date, nice morning hike. So I'm gonna date the Eagles.
They're
frisky.
You know,
I like it. I like
Jalen
it.
Jalen Hurts, the only thing I worry about with that is he takes longer than anybody else in the NFL to throw the football, and you got some pretty formidable pass rushers coming at him between DeMarcus Lawrence, you got Leonard Williams, and obviously you talked about Montez Sweat, oh my God, the other guy whose name is escaping
Chase
me
Young.
Right now. Chase Young, of course. How can I forget Chase Young coming off the edge in Washington? You got to see them twice a year. That's not going to be fun. I don't know. There's not enough for me. Not enough for
also,
me to get on board with the Eagles. But I like you going out on a limb there, Drew.
I am with you on I do like what I see. I love Devonta Smith as well. And I'm also I'm a fan of some of the skill position players on that team, some more than most. But the beginning of the year at Atlanta with Arthur Smith, then they host San Fran at this Dallas team, host Kansas City. That's tough. If you start off losing a couple of those games, then Nick Sirianni, the shine rubs off a little bit on him, and it starts to be an interesting situation in a hard market in Philadelphia.
The one thing, it was so evident last year, though, guys, with the Peterson was such a moron, the front office. It just seemed like a disaster. And obviously, when they threw in the Sudfeld, what the hell his name was?
I got great night Sudfeld experience, former Washington fan favorite.
Through the division
gonna
to
make
quote
the
unquote,
roster. I don't know. Leave me alone.
Yeah, he threw the division because he wanted to see what he had. I mean, what an absolute joke. Now, obviously, Doug Peterson died a Game of Thrones death for them to get Devonta Smith, which is unbelievable. I mean, they got Devonta Smith because they lost that game.
Yeah.
So I do think even if Sirianni is some moron, I do think at least the attitude, the general consensus at camp has got to be a little upbeat, because Peterson, you could just tell he was Dan Quinn 2.0. He had to go.
I think I know who the three ghosts are from the host of this podcast. So let's go to our guest. The next step of this is who we swiped right on and we're no longer
That's
texting.
That's not true.
Oh, okay, hold on, Drew. We'll hold on you, buddy. But Craig, I want to go to the guest first. Who are we ghosting in this division?
I keep going back and forth, to be honest, between obviously Dallas between New York and Philly, because Philly, like, they are intriguing. They have some weapons, but New York has one weapon in particular that is going to make them a pain in the butt. So I think I'm gonna ghost Philly. Because I don't believe in Hurts. I don't believe that this team really is on the right track at all defensively. Like, I don't really know where they're at. They seem like they're a team in transition that eventually is going to build up to something that is, when they're good again, not very reminiscent of what they look like right now.
Yeah.
That's not me telling you that New York is good. It's just telling you that New York has Saquon Barkley, and if they ride him and he's as good as we all think he is and as good as he's shown to be, that stylistically, like, that's going to be a lower possession number game, and they're going to be a team that's just annoying to play and might steal a few games on accident, and is probably going to, like, they're going to wind up with a better record than they belong having based off of their talent, because which obviously screws them in the long term, because they could use a couple of more really high draft picks, and they're going to wind up, like, somewhere in that 12 range again in the draft. So I think Philly has the bigger flame out potential, and I want nothing to do with them.
Let me disagree with you completely. I do believe Philly has flame out potential, but I know for a fact that this New York Giants team is not good. And I just don't think it's a well-built team. I don't like the offensive line that's going to be protecting one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, in my opinion, in Daniel Jones, and then making the run blocks for Mr. Saquon Barkley, coming off a really tough injury. We talk about Dak's injury and how will he look when he comes back. Saquon's very similar. It's not easy for a running back of his stature and of his body type to come back from that injury. I'm interested to see how that works. I really don't like this team. I don't like that Kenny Golladay can't seem to either stay healthy or get open in camp, and they spent a lot of money on him. Sterling Shepard's 1 year older. John Ross is there. Darius Slayton is good, but he's a fifth-round pick for a reason. These aren't world beaters on the outside, and Evan Ingram was still waiting to appear. And then on the defensive side, they have a couple of cast-offs from other teams like Blake Martinez that have starting roles here and can play for them. I just don't see this defense holding up to even a Philly-type offense. I don't see them beating Washington at all. I don't see them beating a good Dallas team at all, and I think they lose out to Philly in the end. I have no problem ghosting this New York Giants team, even with the hype. I mean, we want to talk about head coaches and whether they have a locker room. Joe Judge, what he's done, four people retired in the middle of the training camp on this guy. I'm not sure Joe Judge in that New England way works out of New England. I'm ghosting the New York Giants. Dangles, I think you agree with me.
I do, actually, yeah. I am ghosting the Giants as well. I mean, look, short of a Josh Allen-like glow-up this year for Danny Dimes, I'm ready to label him a bust. Like, this is a guy who's supposed to come in and be the next, you know, the next franchise quarterback. He doesn't throw the ball deep. He's not efficient when he throws the ball short yardage. I mean, what are we going to do if Saquon Barkley gets... I don't think Saquon Barkley's ever played a full season, has he? He's been injured both years, so we haven't seen a full 16, now 17 games out of Saquon Barkley. I want to root for the kid as much because I think he's a... You know, we all heard about how he's a generational talent, blah, 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 all these things, and he is. He's proven to be when he's healthy. And short of that, even with that, it's, you know, you can game plan for Saquon. What are we going to do when you can't, you know, when Daniel Dimes can't complete throws or can't hold on to the football? Fumbles are still an issue. Ball security with this kid. So I don't know. There's too many variables at play for me here. I think I'm going to ghost the New York Giants. I just don't trust. After all these years, I don't trust the way that Dave Gettleman is building this team.
And I
agree with you. They're built well up the middle, but they're slow on the outsides. And again, you talk about the receivers you're going to have to be dealing with if you don't have good corners. I mean, this is like what James Bradbury and
Adoree Jacksberry. I will step on that. But I will say, Dangles, you forgot to mention it's Coach Jason Garrett calling the offensive plays there for
right.
Danny Dimes. We know how brilliant of a mind Coach Jason Garrett is. Schaefer the Sharp, I think you kind of spoiled this already, but you're not going to be killing the Giants. What are you doing?
No, I'm actually surprised that this is consensus among you guys because this is all about expectations. So who am I ghosting? Have we watched Hard Knocks? Dangles has said himself, what are we watching here? What are we watching? Now, the Giants are going to go out. They're going to try to compete. They're going to try to have a winning record. The Cowboys' expectations, air quotes, expectations each year, Super Bowl bust. You match this team up with Tampa Bay, Green Bay, San Francisco, the Rams. They're not even close. Prescott hasn't even played. I am very, very suspicious of his health. They're holding him out. And you guys want to talk about Ezekiel Elliott. Well, I hate to break it to you guys. He's not the Zeke. He's never coming back. He's had three straight years of declining yards per carry, attempts, and rush yards total. Everyone knows the running back in the NFL, an age-old thing. Now, he's only 27 years old, but he is – I mean, you could make an argument that Tony Pollard could be a better – like, have equal carry share.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, like Craig said, offensive side of the ball, they look electric. But it's all contingent on them being healthy. We've seen this story before. I'm not convinced Dak is healthy. Of course, I'm going to do this with a grain of salt because if Dak is healthy and he plays to his ability, then, of course, that this team should be right there. They're favored to win the division. I just think based on their expectations, I think it's completely off. Let's not forget Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore, Dan Quinn. That coaching carousel is not someone I want to be bet on. You guys know what I think about Doug Nussmeier. And here's my last thing. They open up Thursday Night Football, 6.5-point dogs against the defending Super Bowl champions, the Tampa Bay Bucks, and the GOAT himself, TB12. Then they have to travel to the West Coast to play the upstart Justin Herbert-led Los Angeles Chargers. If they lose those two games, they're 0-2. They play their home opener Monday night against the Philadelphia Eagles. And boy, oh boy, that pressure on them to perform, their assholes are going to be the size of almonds. And I would not want to be in that locker room if they're 0-3, boys. I am ghosting the Dallas Cowboys.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, let's move on to the season-long win totals. Let's be quick about it.
Go ahead, Craig.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, it was a tough call because I don't think either of those teams are really good. And I do think that there's high bust potential for all four of these teams. Like, if Fitzpatrick, he's 40. Like, if it goes south, Heinicke was fine in the divisional game. His excitement level exceeds his good level. And so, I don't trust him. Kyle Allen, I don't trust him either. He might wind up being QB2 anyway. So we'll see about that. I don't everything Drew just said about Dallas is 100% true. Philly, I don't know. And you guys are 100% right on the Giants. They're not good. Me not picking them isn't some endorsement that they're good. So this is the NFC East. This is what it is every single year. The hard part is trying to predict the injury stuff, and that's impossible because this sport is too violent. This sport is too, it's too difficult to play
without. No, we're choosing between having, dysentery, syphilis, and typhoid on the Oregon Trail here.
Jesus
it's not
Christ,
it's not really a great decision in any way you go.
I don't think all of those
maybe
made
lower stakes,
Dangle.
Slightly lower stakes than that, but similar.
Maybe slightly lower stakes than that, but the concept is there.
Speaking of lower stakes, let's up the stakes. Let's put out our Brinks Truck bet of the week. We're giving out a season-long win total for a team in this division. I will go first. It's the team that I'm killing. 7 wins is too much for this Giants team. I really think they're one of the worst teams in the league because of Daniel Jones. I just don't see it. I don't see them winning games. And behind Daniel Jones, it's Mike Glennon. We saw what Mike Glennon could do last year. It's not a team I want to bet on. Under 7 wins for the Giants. Dangles?
Tony, we got to stop meeting like this, man. I've also got the Giants under 7 wins at plus 110. They've got some tough matchups on their schedule this year, in addition to the in-division games that I don't think any of which are a gimme. Maybe they pull one off against the Eagles, and maybe they pull one off against, one off against Washington or Dallas, but they also have to play the Falcons, the Saints, the Rams, the Panthers. Yeah. They have the Chiefs, the Bucks. They have to go to Tampa to play the Bucks. They have to go to Miami to play the Dolphins. They have to go to Los Angeles to play the Chargers. They have to go to Chicago to play the Bears. None of those are games that I think the Giants are going to be competitive in. 7 wins I'm not finding as I'm looking at this schedule, and I think plus 110 is a great number to get at, as much of a sure thing as you can find in a very shaky division that can be hard to predict.
All right, before we go to our resident sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookson, let's go to our guest, Mr. Craig Hoffman. Do you have a win total bet for our listeners?
I do, and it's the same one you guys have.
Yes.
I mean, under 7 for the Giants seems like, what's the scenario in which they win 8 games?
I don't see it. I look at the schedule,
I think they have a better chance of winning 7.5, not even possible.
You heard the teams I just named. They don't beat most of those road teams that they have to go play that are out of division.
The way they get the 8 wins is if Daniel Jones shows that he's a first-round pick at quarterback. That's the only way.
That's it.
But he's not. They're not good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable with, I shouldn't say pretty comfortable. I think the Dallas under 9 is, would be my second. Or maybe even Washington over 8.5.
I like Washington over 8.5. That was the other one I was looking at here. I like that price, too, at minus 115. Not bad for something that I think will probably happen.
As I mentioned in the date segment, though, there's something that just feels terribly off about Dallas. But riding that versus the Giants are really bad and Vegas thinks they're going to win 7, I'll just go with that. Although they don't air condition the desert because they lose.
Shay for the sharp.
Well, boys, leave it to the sharp to make a bet that everyone's too scared to make. My best bet for this division will be the Washington football team over 8.5 at minus 115 for a litany of reasons. But more so than this, we've talked about them at length in this pod. We don't need to go over the roster. This is what I like the most. I told you about the coaching matchup. Did you know they end the season with 5, count them, 5 division games starting at week 14. They won't play Dallas or Philadelphia till week 14. They flip-flop between those two teams. They end at the New York Football Giants. Give me this Ron Rivera-led team. Give me this Fitzmagic-led team to get 10, 12 games under their belt. If they have a chance to win that division, which they proved last year they can do, I like this team to really close out the year strong, knowing everything's ahead of them. They should control their own destiny as long as they can keep their head above water. And again, we're betting on them to be over 500. That's it. We're not betting on them to win 11 games.
Yeah.
We're not betting on them to win 12 games. We're betting on them not even to win their division. We're betting on them to be 500. I love this bet. Washington football team over 8.5 minus 115.
I like it, Drew, and thank you for that. And thank you for Craig coming on the show, helping us break down the NFC East. Again, for Tony Cavallo, for Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, for Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookson, we are the West Coast Gamblers, the only gambling show that makes you money, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Tomorrow, we're coming out with my NFC North breakdown, my Green Bay Packers, the last dance, last chance for Aaron Rodgers to win his second ring. I know Drew's going to hate me talking about it, but I'm already gloating. I'm pumped about it. As always, thank you for listening.
Dub C to the G, West Coast Gamblers.
Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry. Evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.